course, country people put up with a great more, or many more hardships than city people. One of these is the provision of power, or was the provision of power. We only had as a source of power kerosene, which was for the fuel for the lights, and there were two main types of these. There was the hurricane light, which you would use for outside, so that the wind wouldn't blow out the light. Inside, we had a kerosene light with a wick which could be turned up or down, a glass which could break, and these lights would have to be frequently refilled. Reading by them would give something of a strain to the eyes. And there's a refinement of that is what was called the Coleman light. This gave a pressurized flow of kerosene, which lit up a mantle, which would last a certain amount of time. They were rather fragile, and it gave a very good light. The only problem was it would have to be pumped up every now and again to revive the pressure.
And were there lamps in all the rooms? Were they fixed to the walls or just
no,
portable?
Lamps were not fixed to the wall. They would be placed on a table. They can be moved from room to room, and of course there were torches to see outside. As for seeing outside, when we arrived, there was what would be called an outhouse. It was situated just to the west of what are now the servants' quarters. There were two cubicles. One, I believe, was for the family, and the other was for any others who were servants or workers. And of course the contents of the cans had to be regularly disposed of by digging holes, and those were the almost normal means of sanitation in those days. Finally, when I was a man, I suggested to my father that we put down a septic tank system, and I dug this gigantic hole in the northwest corner of the house, beside the northwest corner of the house, and so I constructed a septic system, which was much more convenient for my parents in their old age, and I was pleased to be able to do it for them.
What was your mother's sitting room like? Did they have a radio?
Oh, a radio. Having no electricity, of course, an electric wireless was out of the question. My father managed to acquire a radio, but this had to be powered by batteries, which would require going into Berwick, getting them filled up and bringing them out home.
Filled up with what?
Well, such as you do with car batteries.
Huh?
It just provides power. So how do you work a radio in a car?
And was that there from the early times, or did that come later?
What, the electricity?
The radio. Do you remember that there being a radio, say, before the war? Or?
Oh, yes. I think very early on I meant to buy a radio, it was big enough to contain big enough to contain the battery at the back. And you always had to be sure that there was enough power to watch all these favourite programmes. So you didn't turn it on at the beginning of the day and turn it off at the end of the night.
So would this be your main source of entertainment in the evenings, listening to the radio?
Yes, listening to the news at tea time. And one or two of our favourite cereals of the time. My mother, who didn't get out a great deal, I'm sure derived great enjoyment from certain cereals that she used to enjoy. Other forms of entertainment were playing cards. My father liked playing cribbage, a game which is not terribly popular these days, and a neighbour from his down the road, another soldier settler, who, during the war, had had part of his chin removed by shrapnel. They used to enjoy their Saturday night cards. My mother always used to make a stew on the nights that he would he would come up, because of course he had difficulty in chewing. So entertainment in those days was a fairly simple affair. There was a picture theatre in Berwick. When I was a youngster, I liked to see a good film. I would have to ride a bicycle into the town, park my bike at the back of the local mechanics hall, or probably the picture theatre. And our entertainment then could be described as being simple, but if you don't know any better, it's quite satisfactory.
And did your mother like to cook?
My mother was an extremely good cook. She always did some baking during the week. Never baked bread, but cakes and biscuits. And one of her favourites was what they call Anzac biscuits, which was a fairly simple. Simply mixed and baked sort of biscuits, whereas, as I recall it, dates or sultanas to give variety to it.
What sort of stove did she have?
Oh yes, for heating in the kitchen we had a cast iron stove which would contain the wood. The wood on top, which would be burned in the firebox, and this would circulate heat around the oven below, and particularly on cold winter mornings would be very welcome. To provide additional warmth. It does take a bit of practice, I guess, to ensure that the cooking comes out right. But yes, in many, many homes that was the normal form of cooking.
And what was the rest of the kitchen like? Did you eat in it, or was it just
the rest of the kitchen was was fairly small. There was room for a kitchen table, It contained a sink in which the washing up would be done. And there's also a rather large cupboard that would be the west end of the kitchen, where all the kitchen utensils would be stored, along with all the various tins and jars of food were accessible.
How often would you go into Berwick for supplies?
Probably twice a week. Twice a week, I would think, would be normal. So you always made sure that you got everything that you wanted. You didn't turn around and go back for something that you'd forgotten. There was only one grocer in Berwick that I can recall, and that was a fellow named Loveridge. And he had a great great range of merchandise to suit the requirements both of the people in the town and for those in the country areas.
And were you ever cut off by floods? There was the big one in 1934 that you would have just missed.
1934, I was still up in Kiabra.
Yeah.
But I do remember hearing about the floods, particularly around Koori Rup. I also recall the bushfires in 1938, when I can recall the the skyline over across beyond Beaconsfield, all the hills seemed to be ablaze, looking out over the north, we could see the Dandenongs ablaze, and of course the pools of smoke that accompanied it left the sunrises and sunsets quite a magnificent sight, with the sun shining through this red haze. That was a very, very hot, dry summer, 1938.
A couple of other buildings that we haven't mentioned very much.
Mm-hmm.
The one that we know as the kitchen washhouse, I think you call that servants' quarters.
Yes, it was called the servants' quarters. That consisted of the main large room, which had been rather poorly given a cement or concrete floor, which had badly broken away. The large room consisted of, obviously, there must have been a room for a stove for cooking, and the chimney still standing. And there were two rooms off, which could have been used for non-kitchen material, or could have been used for the maid's quarters. So preparation of meals in those days would have meant that meals would have to be brought in to the house, which wouldn't be too pleasant in wet weather.
But there was a kitchen in the homestead by the time you got there, wasn't there?
There was. Oh yes, yes. Well, things had changed quite remarkably well by that time.
Was the servants' quarters used? Did you use it at all in your time then?
Well, not for anything concerned with cooking or anything like that. My father had finally turned into a workshop, which he used to use for making and repairing various things. The roof, of course, was constructed with slate, and it had deteriorated to the extent when the Bury Council took it over that it had to be replaced entirely. Which made it quite quite livable.
On the south veranda, just off the south veranda, your father built a bush house for your mother's gardening?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't there. The bush house was really on a sort of direct route from the factory to the house. This meant that they used to go out along the roads and obtain this tea tree, which they've used to to form the bush house, the walls and the roof. But of course, eventually this sort of material breaks down, and it there's no room for it now.
Was that like a potting shed or something like that?
She probably would have used it as a potting shed as well. She had pot plants and some of her favourite ferns growing in there. Yes. She was a very keen gardener. Enjoyed it very much.
Anything else you want to say about your parents? About their later years on the property, or?
The coming of electricity made a very big difference in my parents' lives, particularly my mother, who, although she still used a wood stove for her cooking, but meant they had electric light. They they were able to have television, which my mother enjoyed particularly. And of course, early use of a telephone. my parents finally were relatively comfortably off. My father by that time had been able to get the totally and permanently incapacitated pension, which meant that he was more financially secure. My mother was also was on a pension in her 70s. She had increasing heart problems, in which she used to visit Alfred Hospital, and one Saturday morning I came out to visit my mother, found her lying in bed. My father had been attempting to plug a hole in the ceiling of the passage, but I could see that she was really quite ill. So I told my father that she should bring for an ambulance. I had to go at that stage. My mother was transported to Berwick Hospital, and overnight she had a further heart attack, and on a Sunday afternoon, a specialist called out from Dandenong. I rode in the ambulance with my mother to Dandenong Hospital. Unfortunately, she passed away during the night. My father, attempted to battle on his own. After about 4 years of this, during which time I once took him to Sydney for a week for a bit of a break, he became increasingly feeble. And we took it upon ourselves, my brother and me, to look after him. Finally, we were able to get him into a nursing home. He finally passed away in 1980. 10 years after after the death of my mother. Then my son, or my two elder sons, got the bright idea that they would like to live out at the homestead. My son Trevor did a great deal to look after the garden, even managing to get hold of a ride-on mower. And he really had it looking nice. Finally, the Glasser Settlement Commission, which by then the Lands Department, in negotiation with the Berwick Council, decided that they would take back the lease which had been given to my father, and my son moved out from there in sacred quoting a date because it'll be wrong. We surviving family are very pleased with the work which has been done by the Berwick Council in restoring what I believe is a very very interesting part of the development of Berwick, and to young people it gives a very good impression of what life was like in the past, and yet providing sufficient incentive for people to come out and enjoy this great part of history of Australia and Victoria, spanning oh, 1860 or so to now, which is 130 years or so. Yeah.